there's more we look forward to. With my colleagues Juan Gonzalez and Nermeen Sheikh, we thank you all for being with us for these 25 years. I'm Amy Goodman.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Did you know that KBOO Community Radio is listener sponsored? That's right, 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you. You've stepped up and helped us to meet two matches already on the way to our $45,000 end-of-year drive goal. And now, in the last week of 2021, we've got another special incentive to help us finish strong. Contribute at kboo.fm/give by December 31st, and your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $8,000 thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. All donations will be matched, even if you've already given this year. Make one last contribution to KBOO in 2021 at kboo.fm/give right now.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Good evening. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. I'm Althea Billings. Tonight, we're giving our volunteers the night off and taking a look back at some of the great work they've done this year in our News in Depth segment. In the next half hour, we're taking a look back at some of our coverage related to the environment and sustainability. Let's get into it. First, an excerpt from our coverage of the Clean Energy Opportunity Campaign, which saw success in the Oregon legislature, pushing the state to the forefront of climate action. The Oregon legislature concluded its 2021 session at the end of June, as much of the state saw record-breaking triple-digit temperatures. At the end of the session, a suite of three bills backed by the Clean Energy Opportunity Campaign passed into law and take Oregon to the cutting edge of clean energy commitments. The bills address a variety of interconnected issues, from the need for more affordable utility bills to preparing for 100% clean energy, with an eye towards environmental and racial justice. House Bill 2021 passed on June 26th. It requires electricity providers in Oregon to use 100% clean sources by the year 2040. That puts Oregon on track to have the fastest clean energy transition in the country, on par with New York State. House Bill 2842 passed on the 26th as well. It creates a home repair grant program for low-income Oregonians to get energy efficiency upgrades. House Bill 2475 passed both houses back in May. It allows for energy discounts for low-income people and provides greater participation in energy decision-making for BIPOC, rural, and frontline communities. I spoke with two members of the Clean Energy Opportunity Campaign to learn more.
My name is Nikita Daryanani. I use she, her pronouns, and I am the Climate and Energy Policy Manager at the Coalition of Communities of Color.
Yeah, and my name is Nick Johnson. I am the Executive Director of Lake County Resources Initiative, a small nonprofit organization located in rural southeastern Oregon. I got involved with it because Lake County has a reputation or a record of being very successful in large utility scale solar development in a very rural part of the state. So I was bringing some of those insights and lessons learned and just potential impacts or just a different perspective from rural Eastern Oregon to the table, and just kind of bringing a new perspective.
The suite of bills have broad implications. It's not just energy companies that are impacted. Individuals will see change too. Nikita explains some of these impacts.
So for HB 2475, so this is a bill that allows utilities to consider environmental justice factors or social equity factors or energy cost burden, which is just the percentage of your income that's spent on energy bills. It'll allow utilities to take that into consideration when they're coming up with how much people pay for electricity and what those rates look like. So yes, that passed this session, and so I think we'll see new rates next year. And for HB 2021, the utilities and the electric companies are required to come up with these plans for how they're going to comply with the 100% clean energy standard. And so we'll see those plans at the beginning of next year as well. And hopefully we'll see the start of the community energy project from that $50 million, hopefully in the next year or so too. And yeah, so Nick and his organization leads the development of projects in Lake County like that. So I think hopefully we'll see more projects similar to him and his organization lead throughout Oregon with that $50 million. And then hopefully also that can just be a start, you know, and that there can be more funding for localized community-based energy projects like that throughout Oregon. And so in the next few years, hopefully we'll see that, I think, ramping up. And like I said, I think HB 2021 sets a really good foundation and sets us up really well for more projects like that. And so I think what we can expect is that new electricity rates in the next year, and really ramping up community-based renewable projects as well. So I think that itself can also it can also create jobs, and so I think we'll see a huge ramping up of the jobs created as well in Oregon for all three of the bills. So healthy homes also will create jobs through the actual retrofits of homes that'll be able to. That are funded by the program. So I think that there are plenty of benefits that Oregon will be able to see in the next few years.
Yeah, and I completely agree. There's going to be a lot of opportunities and just a better opportunity to make choices for the consumer about where they're sourcing their energy and so on and so forth. But one opportunity that really sticks out to me and really excites me is that, you know, this has kind of laid the groundwork for starting conversations between Eastern Oregon and Western Oregon about working together to, like I mentioned earlier, partner up and tackle climate change together. And specifically, an opportunity that excites me is for organizations like mine in rural Eastern Oregon who develop these kinds of projects, but do it from a place where we're trying to mitigate any impacts to land, any impacts to people, or just any impacts whatsoever, and think about this for the long-term benefit and the long-term impacts. But, you know, this, an opportunity like this allows us to partner with some of those more urban organizations and potentially even like on a neighborhood-by-neighborhood level with communities in Portland and, you know, look at even hosting projects in our county directly for folks, say in Portland or more urban parts of the state. You know, a lot of times in urban areas, you don't have the land resources necessary to host these kinds of projects, but in rural Eastern Oregon, we certainly do. So it creates an opportunity for us to build those relationships between Western and Eastern Oregon and work together for everybody's benefit.
That was a clip from our coverage of the Clean Energy Opportunity Campaign. We heard from Nikita Daryanani with the Coalitions of Communities of Color and Nick Johnson from the Lake County Resources Initiative. Next up is a story Jesselyn Lemke produced over the summer about communities in the Cascades working to rebuild from devastating wildfires.
The communities of Blue River, Vida, and Detroit, Oregon suffered staggering home losses in the 2020 wildfires. Today, these communities are working around the clock with rebuilding efforts of homes, orchards, and outbuildings. Farmer Nathan Mead has worked the same 60-acre filbert orchard along the river outside Vida since 1973. Meade and his family lost all 12 structures on their land in the Holiday Farm fire. This winter, Meade ordered 4,800 young filbert trees from a nearby nursery to replace the 10% of his orchard that was destroyed.
Stop.
This is the sound of contractors dropping pipes from a truck along the rows of new filbert trees growing from the ashy soil.
Worst case was on this west side over here where you see the young ones. They were older trees in there, and they would get embers that catch in the heartwood. Lots of times these will get trunk rot, and they get embers catching them and just burn the centers right out of them. They're planted in the 40s, so they're probably 80 years old. So there's about 4,800 new trees out there, yes. This guy's got about 6 inches of growth on him. Hopefully in 5 years they'll actually get a crop off of them.
General contractor Norm Kuhn was laying down irrigation pipe for the new filbert trees on June 25th. In the Vida area, Kuhn says his company has helped at least 12 homeowners remove the charred debris from their homes to begin rebuilding.
The material supply is short because of the rush of all the work being done, and the hazard trees is a big project to get down and out of the way for the safety of the homes and the highway. Oh, they've been short on lumber, more so labor to get it up here, get the gravel put in place, and the a lot of material is short-handed because of the pandemic and the fire, so it's been a challenge to get everything here on time.
Further north, a drive through the tiny mountain town of Detroit, Oregon reveals block after block of charred house footprints. This is damage from the Beachy fire that roared through the same night as the Holiday Farm fire. The blackened forest for miles either side of Detroit is telling. 264 homes burned here. Destroyed, Detroit is currently a town of RVs, trailers, and porta-potties and construction equipment. Signs that read, "Rebuild Detroit," with a website for donations are posted every few blocks and posted at the town's grocery store. Detroit is undertaking a massive transition. This is Rich Duncan, a contractor whose construction company is rebuilding a community building for Detroit from the old high school. I caught up to Rich by phone as he was on site in Detroit.
So there's some new people in the area vying with those opportunities, and then there's some existing people that are really eager to rebuild their vacation home. And there's a lot of construction going on. Now our hope and dream that I have is that we have a community center that they come back and there's some originality to that, some home to that, that they feel that this is still a place that they would consider, you know, it's still Detroit, Oregon.
Ideally, the communities of Blue River, Vida, and Detroit will see some real rebuilding progress by the end of 2021. This is journalist Jessel Lemke with KBOO Radio.
That was Jesselyn Lemke's coverage of communities in the Cascades working to rebuild from the 2020 wildfires. This is a special episode of KBOO News In Depth. We're taking a look back at some of our coverage this year related to sustainability and the environment. Now we'll pivot to hear about some sustainability efforts in the Portland metro area. Up first, an excerpt from my trip to the Ridwell warehouse. Throwing things out can be really guilt-inducing, especially when you think the item could have another use, but your local trash and recycling program won't take it. One local business is tackling that feeling with a membership service that helps divert those things from the waste stream and back into reuse. It's called Ridwell, and it services the greater Portland metro area, picking up unwanted items every 2 weeks and doing the work of figuring out where they can be reused and recycled. Taylor Lowen is the general manager at the Portland headquarters of Ridwell, where she recently gave a tour to Oregon State House Representatives Janine Salmon from District 30 in Hillsborough and Tana Sanchez from District 43 in North Portland. Taylor explained how Ridwell originally got started in Seattle.
Ribble got started back in 2018, by a man named Ryan Metzger, who's still our CEO up in Seattle, and essentially got started because he had, I think what most Americans have, kind of like the get rid of stuff room in his house, with things he's been meaning to recycle that they just hadn't got around to recycling. So, you know, he called like four different battery places just to find one he could take batteries to recycle. And then we found it's like a 20-minute drive, and so he's reaching out to his neighbors, asking them if they have batteries or things, and got a huge response. carpooled all the stuff over there, and then he just kept doing it for other categories. Things like plastic film, holiday nights, and it became this huge recycling carpool that expanded well beyond his neighborhood in Queen Anne and Seattle, got a ton of traction, and that's when he thought, like, maybe there's a business model here. So really, they started out of his garage and doing, you know, PowerPoint presentations in people's living rooms as it got off the ground. And then, you know, it was probably around 15,000 members, people who were getting those biweekly pickups last fall, and they decided to do the first expansion to Portland. Since then, it has just been like being tied to a rocket ship that won't run out of fuel. So here, the first few weeks, it was me driving around in a van, delivering bins, doing pickups, got my first driver, and now there are 41 employees that work out of this location.
Wow.
And as of today, we have 17,500 members in the broader, like, Portland metro area in less than a year. And so that scaling's been incredible. And, you know, I think for me, being part of this process has been awesome because our members are really the catalyst for the change that we're trying to create. And so their enthusiasm is what motivates us to continue to seek new ways to help them waste less, whether that's making our pickups easier or seeking out new partners like the clamshells we brought to Portland in May. And we're just hoping to continue that process. You know, I do recognize that Riddle is just one piece in this kind of broader effort, especially here in Oregon, to hit waste and diversion goals.
Ridwell itself is nestled in a business park out by the airport. And while it certainly isn't the largest warehouse on the block, they do a lot with the space they have. Stepping past the break room, the warehouse is around the size of a high school gymnasium, divided in two. It's orderly and pretty quiet until they turn on the balers. Trucks pull into the back with canvas bags gathered from members in the Portland metro area. Every 2 weeks, they pick up five main categories of items and one special rotating category. Each time, they unload each category in its own bag. Batteries and bulbs in one, plastic film, styrofoam, threads, think clothing, and plastic clamshells like what you might buy berries or salad greens in at the grocery store. They also have a rotating category of more specialized items. When I visited, the team had been collecting crayons. Boxes upon boxes were filled with crayons in various stages of use. Workers in the warehouse sift through the bags, making sure that everything in there is categorized correctly. Once they're finished, the crayons will be sent to a nonprofit in California to get reused, Taylor explains.
Exactly, they get melted down. They're sorted by color, then they're melted down into the crayon material, and then they're made into new crayons, and then shipped off to kids' wards in hospitals all over the country, including here in Oregon. Here's this very heavy bag of batteries. It's probably a new member. They tend to have a cachet of batteries in their house. And these all go to Ecolites. They are broken down into their respective materials. So the bulbs are, you know, glass and metal components recycled separately. And the batteries are sorted by alkaline or lithium, their chemical components, and then recycled accordingly. Those are two ones that definitely new members use the most. It's kind of impressive how many batteries we can get sometimes.
I had almost the full bag.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you don't have to sort them. They can be lithium, rechargeable, alkaline, all in there.
Yeah, they all. So we take the terminal ends of specific batteries for safety, and then they all go over to the same partner, and they have a whole team that is trained to sort them. Like, they can just pick up a battery and know what it is. They're very fast at it, and they have their facilities out there with special air circulation for, like, mercury from light bulbs and all that right equipment to really specialize in it. This is our number one category. Plastic film. So this is all of that stretchy, flexible plastic. Your Amazon mailers, your bubble wrap, your Ziploc bags. I mean, just all that stuff that people feel guilty throwing that plastic away.
Yeah.
So these behind you are just bales full of plastic film. And you can see all the Amazon mailers in here. You know, we have different chip bags, just everything in here that we get from our members. When we do pickups, 80% of our members give this every single pickup. It is the most used category.
I do, every single
pickup. What are the contaminants that you find?
So the number one contaminants are going to be mixed materials. So a lot of people, in addition to Amazon mailers, will give you the paper mailers that have some plastic components that we unfortunately can't do. That's probably the number one contaminant. So it's mostly, maybe you have materials where it's plastic, but then it has that metallic silver on the inside. But this all goes to trucks. in Nevada. Yeah. And they grind this down with wood chips and turn it into composite lumber. A lot of it's composite decking that people here use in Oregon. You know all the facts.
It's pretty awesome.
This is plastic film right here.
Oh,
and then we can go on over next to our thread. So I used to have just one baler for plastic film. And then when we started clamshells, it was so much plastic that 2 months ago we had to invest and get a second baler in site just to keep up with everything every single day.
That was an excerpt from our trip to the Ridwell Warehouse, a company new to the Portland area that offers a subscription service for members to keep hard-to-recycle items out of the waste stream. Our final clip this evening comes from Laura Smith's story on the People's Depot Can Redemption Service.
Hi, I'm Laura Smith, and what you hear is the sound of cans and bottles beginning to be collected at one of the People's Depots site here in Portland, Oregon.
The People's Depot is a community-led independent bottle redemption service born out of the COVID-19 pandemic when access to bottle redemption became limited and people were in critical need of income. Bottle and can deposits are a critical source of income for many members of our community to cover basic human needs, such as food, housing costs, bus passes, and laundry. Informal recyclers often exist on slim economic margins, and the COVID-19 crisis has magnified economic instability. Despite the added risk of COVID-19, individuals are still collecting beverage containers for deposits. The People's Depot operates 3 locations and works alongside harm reduction outreach services. By stacking bottle return with other social services, the People's Depot both supports individual health and well-being and helps preserve community safety in a time when all are encouraged to minimize travel.
So People's Depot provides a really great resource for the community. They're mobile and they meet people where they're at so that they can get money for their cans. And this is not something that the city or anyone else provides. So if it wasn't here, like, people want to complain about there being trash and stuff, but this is like a resource for, like, not only is it getting rid of waste, but it's also like giving people money so that they can live more comfortably. And it's just a really important resource to have for our community out here.
Your name's Michael.
Michael Fawcett.
And you're with the Ground Score Association.
Ground Score Association. And we come out and we buy bottles and cans from people on Saturdays. And we partner up with PPOP over here, the Portland People's Outreach Project. And they do a little harm reduction where they're offering people supplies. And we're out here from one till three every Saturday. People get used to us, and we treat them a little better than the bottle drop does.
What do you think makes the difference?
Well, just, you know, we're a little nicer to people than at the bottle drop. We don't have armed guards and that kind of thing. And we take all their cans from them, pretty much. I think people look forward to coming to see us, coming to see PPOP. It's, you know, kind of a routine for them. And then, you know, if you keep taking away people's touchstones, their routines, I don't think that's good for people. I know it's not good for me. So I think that it's just important to show up every time for people and become a fixture in their life.
So, Andy, would you like to talk to me about your relationship to the People's Depot?
Yes. I need the place to make extra money, or else I'll be in severe poverty. So, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
How long have you been utilizing the People's Depot?
Close to a year since I've discovered it under the Morrison Bridge. What impact? Oh, a lot. It cleans up the environment. put some extra money in people's pocket. And it gathers people together for social exchange, information that people need to know.
Most of these cans and bottles redeemed originate from the ground, litter, or are pulled from public trash cans, where they're diverted from the waste stream.
I'm on disability. The inflation rate has gone so high, and if it weren't for places like this, I wouldn't be able to survive or maintain my current living status. So I mean, it's been an absolute lifeline for me, and I appreciate it immensely.
Do you want to share how long that's been the case for you, or how long you've been coming to People's Depot?
I would say I've been coming here for 10, 11 years. It's had to tighten my belt and do whatever I could to survive, you know. Short of criminal activity, I don't go that route, so it's just become a basic survival all the way around. So, like I said, this is one of my lifelines to have anything extra. Like to have a cigarette once in a while, maybe a beer twice a month, maybe stretch it out. But I appreciate things when I get them, so it's a blessing to have this type of place.
Some people come by car, but not very many. Mostly it's people on foot or with wagons they pull, or bicycles with trailers. People are happy to see each other. They're generally relaxed. It's a chance to rest and get a little money for the day or week.
Why do I come out here? Anything to make money, to make me feel part of the community, and to see people doing positive things.
What do you think the importance is of the People's Depot to the community?
To let them know that, you know, the whole reason why we started this is because we're canners helping canners, if that makes any sense. You know, so we, as being canners, we understand when you go to the bottle, you know, the bottle drop and stuff, and, you know, how people can be treated, or people, you know, don't want to go travel that far to a bottle drop. So we brought the bottle drop to them. And, you know, we're way different than them because we're also canners. So we also, you know, travel and get cans for our income. This is our income. So we pretty much want to let the voices of the canners know that we hear you, that, you know, we understand what you're going through, and that we're trying to make a difference. We're trying to put you guys back on the map to where everybody will consider this as your, this is an income. This is your income. So we want everybody's participation to, you know, understand that point. So pretty much when they come to People's Depot, they know that we get it, you know, and we believe in you guys, and we encourage you guys to keep canning and keeping the environment clean and recycle. We want to encourage all that, and until there ain't no butt left in me, we're gonna keep doing that. So that's what to know about us.
One last question: what do you think the impact of canners and canning is on the waste stream and its importance to the community overall?
I think the impact of canners has a great multiple impact on the environment and everything, because if it wasn't for the canners, then the world would be way more trash, or more polluted. The waters would be more polluted, and everywhere else would be way more trash. I know people say that there's trash here, that trash there, but if it wasn't for canners, then it would be way worse than that. You know, last year we recycled over 25 million cans. Can you imagine that 25 million cans being outside on the sidewalk or hanging out of a garbage can? No, that's too much. You know, so canners play our role. We just want to be recognized for it. That's all. That's pretty much what it is. And so that's why we have the People's Depot, because we do recognize that, you know. And so we play our part, and we want everybody else to play their part. So I think we make a big impact on our community.
That was part of Laura Smith's story on the People's Depot, a can redemption service in the Portland area. All of these stories and all of our work on KBOO News In Depth from the past year can be found on our website, kboo.fm. We're coming to the end of our time for this special retrospective, but before we go, I want to mention that the KBOO News and all of our shows here on KBOO are made possible by support from our listeners and members. If you've appreciated our work this year, now is a great time to donate. You can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Every dollar counts, and we so appreciate all your support throughout the year. Thank you all so much for listening, and thank you to all the volunteers who have contributed to the newscast or taken classes with us this year. This has been a KBOO News In Depth 2021 retrospective. I'm Althea Billings. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Welcome to the best of Counterspin for 2021. I'm Janine Jackson. We call it the best of, but this annual roundup is just a reflection of the kinds of conversations we hope have offered a voice or context or information that might help you interpret the news you read. We are thankful to all of the activists, researchers, reporters, and advocates who've appeared on the show. They help us see the world more clearly and see the role we can play in changing it. You're listening to the best of Counterspin for 2021.